Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And today we are talking about The Salvation, a recent film of from a Danish filmmaker named Christian Levring, one of the Dogma 95 filmmakers. Are you familiar with that, Dad?
Nope. I read about it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll talk about Dogma 95, I guess, at some point. But this film is The Salvation. It stars Mads Mikkelsen, Eva Green, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who are all actors I really enjoy. And as a result, I was super excited to watch The Salvation. I've been intending for this to be an episode ever since I heard about it, with these actors I really like, and it just looked interesting and dark, and, you know, it's a question mark as a new film, as opposed to a lot of the classics that we've been doing lately, a lot of John Wayne, a lot of older films. I was like, let's do this new one, you know, and well, you know, it's always a bit of a mystery what you're going to get with these. So,
well, yeah, a lot of people liked it.
Yeah, it was well reviewed. It has sort of an art house western kind of vibe, I suppose you could say. And it's not a bad movie. It is a it's fine. It's a fine movie, I would say. Oh man, this is going bad already.
Well, let's tell it like it is. I thought that the movie was formulaic.
Uh-huh.
But somehow satisfying in the end.
Well, it's hitting the basic beats of a Western revenge movie. I mean, this
yes. is
just the most basic of them all. it feels like when you look at it, there's going to be things that are kind of unique about it and kind of interesting and exciting. The Danish immigrant angle, I was kind of the hook that I thought was going to be in what the film was about. And Eva Green's character being a mute, having had her tongue ripped out at an early age, and I thought that would give her, you know, there'd be something going on with that character. That was really interesting, and for the most part, those things aren't important.
It's really, a revenge flick.
Yeah, it's just straight
all the
up
way,
a revenge
man.
Flick. You can see a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of just things from other Westerns in this. A lot of, you know, DNA.
Sergio Leone.
Stories you've seen told before. You know, every aspect of this is something we've seen in just an episode of this show, I would say. yeah.
Yep.
And, but yeah, it's a new Western with a really good cast. One thing that does set it aside is it's got a real nihilistic, dark point of view.
Boy, no kidding.
Downbeat film. Even though it's not especially gory or violent. I mean, it is, but it's not more so than even the Magnificent Seven remake from last year, I would say, is about as much violence, maybe even more. But this is just a more dour film with more dour circumstances. You know?
Right, yeah, there aren't many lighthearted moments in this movie.
Oh, there are none at all. I remember thinking that, you know, just like, you know, some comic relief side characters really would not have hurt in this one.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. Mm-hmm. It's a brutal film.
Yeah.
I mean, very violent. They sort of pay homage to Sergio Leone movies. In some of the shots and the way he zeroes in on their faces and I even saw a fly crawl across a face once.
Yeah, that happens for sure. That is a hallmark of the spaghetti western. Yeah, this is it's just a dark film in a lot of ways. It's visually a dark film as well. I don't want to say it's like an overwhelmingly, you know, it's not an upsetting film per se. You know, the opening is pretty rough, but beyond that, it's your basic Western story. You know, it's done with a little bit harder edge than usual. And that I guess is right. The thing that sets it apart a little bit. You know, the defining thing of this film is the darkness, I guess.
They don't waste a lot of time, you know, getting down to the reason for the vengeance, the necessity of vengeance.
One thing you got to say for this film is it moves fast. This is a yep. quick one. You know, it's an hour and a half, and it's tight, and it moves really, really quick along those lines. It opens up with Mads Mikkelsen playing the hero in this. John is a he and his brother are immigrants from Denmark in the Old West. It's sort of an unnamed Old West. They don't even give you a name for the town, really. It's
Black Creek.
Is it Black Creek?
Black okay. Creek. Yep.
Okay.
That might have something to do with the oil in the area.
Yeah, it's an oil-rich town with a bunch of portentous shots of oil, just
yeah,
like
the La Brea tar pits,
crude,
yeah,
all over the place. Which you know is going to make it very wealthy and very dangerous. Is what they're going for. And Mads Mikkelsen playing John, after 7 years, just sort of traveling ahead of his family, making his way in America after the war, the Danish German war of some anyway.
Danish German, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Uh-huh.
Don't know what they call it. Danish German sounds good.
Mm-hmm. He and his brother are soldiers in the Danish German war. they come out to America to kind of carve a path for themselves in America, and after 7 years, they send for John's wife and son. You know, his son, who he barely has ever seen, you know, only as an infant. And the movie opens with them arriving at the train station. What do you think?
Tearful
of the
reunion.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of the look of this film? By the way, I mean, we're getting established in this opening here. It's all very desaturated, very dark, very filtered. And oily. The movie looks oily, I would say.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I thought, actually, the look was pretty good. The CGI was
there's
a little
some
distracting
bad CGI.
Sometimes.
There's some bad CGI. There sure is. I guess it's as good a moment to bring up the Dogma 95 as any. What this was born in Denmark. It was a series of I think it was like 10 things, limitations that filmmakers would come up with to put on their work that would result in a more immersive experience for the audience, I believe, that did not rely on trickery or camera gimmicks or anything like that. There were things, I can't remember all of them, but there were things like they would, you know... you couldn't build any sets, and any props you used had to be sort of found at the location. You know, no, you couldn't set it in a time that wasn't modern, current day. It had to be taking place in the present. Things like that. This movie breaks like all of them. This is not a Dogma 95.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, no, it doesn't really fit into that category.
Yeah, I was looking for any tricks he might have taken from that, and I mean, there's some like close-ups and things like how scenes play out that feel reminiscent of it, but you know, like the use of filters is one of the things they can't do, and this movie is nothing but filters you know, color correcting. There's some nighttime shots that look like illustrations out of a graphic novel because they've been processed so much. It's an interesting look to the film. But it has very little to do with Dogma 95, which he was Christian Levering, the director, was a member of. Are you familiar with Lars von Trier at all?
Nope.
He's a sort of an iconoclast, provocateur director. Does a lot of gruesome thing films about. Most of them are about how rotten America is, and also he's sort of famous for like. Just giving his leading actress these incredible roles that force them to suffer greatly, like just emotionally racking films.
Doesn't sound like I'd enjoy his films that much.
You would hate them. They're so not interesting. I'm trying to think of one that would be even, like, at all interesting to you. And, you know, like, they're... they'd be interesting, but you wouldn't enjoy them. They're rough. And they're not even meant to be enjoyed, really. Dogville was probably the most famous. Have you heard of Dogville? Nicole Kidman film? Okay.
No.
they're punishment films, basically. You know, they're, you know... provocations. They play well at art festivals. Melancholia, maybe. That one got a bit of a release out here.
Heard about that. Didn't see it.
Mm, good films. Good film. He's a good filmmaker. He really is. but it's a very specific type of film. Anyway, he had nothing to do with The Salvation. But Christian Levering, one of his acolytes, kind of, part of that movement in Denmark. And in Mads Mikkelsen, they got the most famous Danish star currently as well. It's a film, though, that despite all these things that should make it more kind of unique, it ends up leaning very heavily into just Westerns, the influence of previous Westerns, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying when I meant when I said formulaic.
Yeah, uh-huh. Very much so. But this opening is pretty intense, huh? This first 15.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. This is really.
You gotta wonder, and I had to wonder, you know, after the first 15 minutes, where is this movie gonna go?
Yeah.
You know.
Well. He's like done at that point. Like just 15 minutes in the movie, the hero is just like he's already just like it's over for the most part.
As far as he's concerned, yeah.
Yeah, there's no happy ending anymore after this, you know? Anyway, what this is he meets his family is at the train station. Everyone looks super Scandinavian and, you know, and blonde and foreign. And he takes, you know, they get in a stagecoach to go to their new home. The first people that are in there with them, which are other immigrants, they get kicked out, so some more powerful...
Low-life scumbags.
Yeah, some scumbags can get the stagecoach first, and, you know, they kind of, like, bully their way in, basically. And they're creeps immediately, obviously.
it's pretty apparent immediately, like you say.
Yeah. These guys are going to be a problem. Drunken, reprobate kind of bad guys. Threatening assholes. And they're threatening quite quickly. They are sexually harassing his wife and pulling a gun and behaving like jackasses. You know, usual Western bully bad guy stuff, kind
of. Yep.
And this is a very good scene. This is maybe the best scene in the film, actually. This because it's very tense and terrifying.
This was well done, I gotta say. I agree.
Yeah. And basically what it is Mads Mikkelsen tries to protect his family and is unable to. They get the drop on him. He pulls his own gun and the bad guy drops his gun and he tells his son to pick up the gun and the guy grabs his son, pulls a knife to him. Then there's guns up everywhere. Ultimately, Mads is kicked out of the stagecoach as it moves and he's chasing it down the road as the bad guys ride off with his family. And by the time he catches up to him, they have killed his son and his wife. And raped his wife, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
He finds his son lying in the middle of the road, and then finally runs down the stagecoach, which has been parked, and the driver's been killed as well.
Yeah, these guys are monsters. They're horrifying guys.
Yeah, true slime
mad
bears.
Dogs. Yeah. And he kills these guys with a rifle. Shoots them
many
dead.
Times.
Yeah. And it is the most justified of Western killings that you can imagine at this point. Like, there's zero.
Yeah, you're thinking, all right, yeah, all right, now what? Now, what are they going to do with the rest of this film?
Well, it just gets darker and remember. Well, I don't know. It doesn't get darker than the opening here. Like, the rest of the stuff.
The opening's pretty dark.
The rest of the stuff that happens is standard Western revenge movie stuff. This, to have his wife and son killed in this fashion in the beginning of the film is, it's really dark. It's really, really abrasive immediately. And we've seen movies where people's, you know, that start with somebody's wife or son getting killed here. We recently saw Last Train from Gun Hill, which starts similar.
That's right. That's right.
But it doesn't play out with as much tension or as much just in-your-faceness as it does in this film. It's a...
In-your-faceness. I like that.
And it's not violent. Well, it's violent, but it's not like... It's not excessively violent. You're not seeing blood or guts or anything, you know. No one's getting... you're not seeing any work with the knife or anything like that, but just the events and the facts of it are gruesome immediately, and it gives the movie very little place to go, actually. I would say,
well, they find a place to go, but I mean it might be darker in that sense.
Well, because it can't get topped.
They add on to it, and boy do they add on to it. I can't believe the what's the name of the actor that plays Delarue?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan,
man. Yeah. What? He's evil.
This is a really good villain performance, I have to say. This guy does a lot with only a few scenes. Guy knows how to play a bad guy real well. This is the actor from, he's on The Walking Dead right now. Plays the, I think he's the main villain on Walking Dead at this time. Plays a lot of bad guys. Yeah, he's a talented actor and well suited to the Western, I would say. He's got a good mustache.
Seemed like it to me, yeah.
Anyway, one of the guys that got killed is this guy's brother, Delarue's brother, and that is immediately revealed. Because after Mads kills these guys, he just sort of runs off into the West, you know, back to meet his brother. You know, back at their ranch, but Delarue finds out quickly that his brother's been killed in this town, and he's actually kind of an outlaw, a bandit outlaw, and a wealthy landowner. Yeah,
extortionist is what he is.
Just a generally awful guy. Generally, everything, every Western villain basically rolled into one, in a way.
he's got an entire town under his thumb.
Yeah.
He's got the entire town buffaloed to do whatever he wants, and he calls it protection.
Yeah, protection racket, that thing.
Yeah.
The first thing he does, he rides into town where Jonathan Pryce is the mayor. Interesting to see him playing this role, huh?
Like, I expected that Jonathan Pryce accent, but it's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's super American in this. Interesting that he's even taking a role of this type, of this size. I mean, I assume what the deal with this film was is that it was a very quick shoot. That this thing probably filmed in like 3 or 4 weeks, something like that. So that's how you get like high and big name talent involved in such a small film. That's often how they do Westerns nowadays. Bone Tomahawk.
Not a huge time commitment then.
Yeah, like Bone Tomahawk was like this, you know. They shot that in like 23 days, something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's how you do low budget films now. And I assume this is a pretty low budget film, even though it's got a lot of look to it. It's not an expensive film. Feels very feels small and what's the word? Internal, cerebral, even. No, that's not right at all. It's personal sized stakes, I guess. There's only a handful of characters. It doesn't, you know. There's a Western village that they appear to have.
Very concise, very succinct.
Yes. Yes. Uh huh. Thank you for bailing me out. So Delarue rides into town, and And it's basically, you know, he just says, you're going to deliver that man to me in 2 hours, or I'm going to kill two of your people. And you can pick him. Or, if you don't pick him, I'll kill four.
Yeah, that's pure evil.
Yeah, this is some serious bad guy. Yeah, these guys, this is... The first half hour of this film, I think, is the most effective, because it's really... it sets up these individual sequences that are really tense right away. And then it kind of lands on the rails, I think, after that, and does things that you expect a Western to do. But this sequence, following that first sequence, is really strong. It's really effective. It's a good scene where they have to pick two people to be sacrificed to the bad guys.
And you know, in other films, they'd pick the two people and there'd be some sort of salvation, you know, that would come along and save them. But no, not in this case.
No, they pick a grandma and the town drunk, and they shoot a point blank in the face, both of them. Yeah, they shoot a grandma point blank in the face right away in this film. It's
and that's not enough.
Yeah, right.
He claims that they weren't good enough citizens. They weren't
old lady good and enough. Drunk don't equal two of my best men. Seems to me.
There it is. Yeah.
Just a third for good measure, and they double the protection fee for the town. It goes from $80 to $160 a month, and this sets up the town, I guess, as just being just spirits broken. You know, they are. There's basically no. I don't know. John Wayne would have hated this town. Put it that way.
That's right. Just like he hated the town in High Noon.
Yeah, it's like that town, but even worse. You know, it is. This town is almost evil at this point because they've been crushed so hard by Delarue and his gang. Like they're
taking an active role in supporting Delarue.
Yeah, because they got no other option, I guess, and so they're basically all antagonists. There's no good people in town, not really.
Right.
I mean, Eva Green is there, but she is a victim just as much as Mads Mikkelsen is. in a lot of ways.
Right.
The rest of the town? No. I mean, there's a preacher-sheriff kind of combination that's not entirely a bad guy, but isn't really a good guy either. He's no help. Everyone else is straight up a bad guy. Jonathan Pryce is a creep.
Yeah, he said that the preacher sheriff is sorry that he has to do what he has to do, but he does it anyway.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Which is that he's probably the best of the worst.
Yeah. He has sent a letter to Washington for assistance. That's what he's done. Yeah. Uh-huh. And they just have to hold out till Washington shows up. Yeah. But in the meantime, they're going to have to kill Mads Mikkelsen. Sorry. Yeah.
That's right. It's the townspeople that actually get a hold of Mads Mikkelsen and hold him.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's not Delarue's men.
No, I mean, yeah, they kind of smell it out and figure out, like, oh, well, it's the foreigner that did it. Yeah, I mean, it really is that simple, isn't it? Like...
Who else could it be?
It's about as close to this movie gets as to actually dealing with the Danish immigrant stuff, which is one of my things I was most excited about, actually. You know, I thought that was what this film was going to be about, and it's not so much. We have Danish heritage, me and you, Dad. So that's right. I was kind of thinking that would be a fun in for us. And it's meaningless after the first 10
minutes. No, it doesn't. Yeah. 10 minutes. Yeah. After the exchange in Danish,
yeah,
with his wife at the train station and a little bit on the stagecoach, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could maybe make the argument that people trust them less because they're foreign, but these people would just, you know, these people are rotten assholes no matter what, you know, or is more for the most part how they're portrayed. They've been victimized so hard that they're
Oh, hey, it just occurred to me.
Yeah.
There, There is one. Remember the son of the old lady who was killed?
Oh, the son. The son is good.
The shopkeeper. Yeah, he's the one guy in the town that actually helps out the
kid,
brothers.
I forgot about him. That's true, yeah. Oh, man, he really gets it for helping, too. That's
yeah.
such a nihilistic film in a lot of ways. No. There's no room for levity in the town either. There's no funny drunk. There's no Andy Devine character. This is just everyone's.
There isn't even a piano player anywhere.
They're all living in perdition here, basically. By the way, the title of this movie, The Salvation, is that ironic or what? Because you could not.
No kidding.
Like.
I kept wondering all the way through. Okay, what's salvation? Who's being saved here?
What's the salvation? You know? Yeah.
Salvation of the town?
No.
Salvation
not.
Of his honor?
Not really. No, I mean, I guess his honor isn't really. I mean,
it remains intact. It
his
wasn't
honor
saved.
Is satisfied when he kills those guys at the beginning. It doesn't make his situation any better, though. After that, it's kind of just survival and a bit of revenge, but mostly survival.
So maybe they're equating survival with salvation.
That is the only argument you can make, other than it's just pure irony, and there is no salvation. Is the point?
That's probably more likely.
This town doesn't exist at the end of the film. It's.
Well, yeah, Mads Mikkelsen tells him to get out. go away from here.
Well, no, I mean, I guess it's just sold out as a corporate, that's hardly a thing. The town takes Mads hostage as soon as he arrives. At first he sells his property to Jonathan Pryce, who's buying up property.
Who's buying up property for, what, a railroad company? Or the oil...
Well, he's actually buying it up for Delarue,
who is also in the employ of the higher ups.
Yes,
right.
Uh huh. Because of the oil, because the oil rich
right.
in town.
I thought there was a railroad involved, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think there's a railroad. There's a railroad at the beginning when they ride into town, but
seems like there should be a railroad involved.
Well, they're oil barons. They're oil barons.
Oil barons. Yeah, they want the land for oil.
Uh huh. Robber barons of the old west. It tracks. he's got a deal with the railroad to keep the cavalry out of town. That's what it is.
Ah, I knew there was a railroad involved.
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah, they're like paying off the cavalry or something, or the railroad. God. Maybe the railroad. Okay, money people want the town for money, is basically what it is. And,
right.
Delarue is sort of their man in Black Creek, I guess. And he's acting like all bad guys in westerns act. You know, he's extorting money from everyone and killing anyone who gets in his way. And
He's also he's been charged with forcing him out as well.
Mm-hmm. And this guy, the preacher, I don't remember if he has a name. He's a minor character. The preacher sheriff,
either.
You know, who wired for help, is talking to Mads Mikkelsen in jail. And he has an interesting bit of dialogue here about Delarue, and he says something like, you know, he used to be a good man, but killing all those Indians, it unsettled his mind or something. That's the backstory. What is the point
of that? That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no point. No point at all.
They're not messing with him having been a good man. This is
right, he's just an asshole all the way.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's like an unreliable narrator thing. Like, this is the story they tell themselves in this town.
The unreliable narrator.
Yeah, like maybe this guy's just wrong. he needs that to justify his life at this point. Shall we talk about Mads Mikkelsen a little bit here? Are you familiar with this actor? You've seen him in stuff.
I like Mads Mikkelsen. Boy, there's no mistaking his features.
Yeah, he's a distinctive looking man. This is one of my favorite actors right now, I gotta say, and one of the reasons I was excited for this film. I don't think they find.
Did you watch Hannibal?
I loved Hannibal. I loved it. Yeah. Did you watch Hannibal?
No.
Oh man, Dad, it's really strong, and it's sort of akin to. Well, do you remember when you remember Jack Nicholson's Joker?
Yeah.
Remember how that was at the time, 1989, revelatory. Everyone was beside themselves on how great that and exciting that was, that performance, and it made the film. And and you were always saying not you, but everyone was always saying, how are they ever going to follow this up? I bet they can't even do the Joker again after that great a performance. And then Heath Ledger played the Joker.
Heath Ledger came along, yeah.
And kind of blew him away, and it was amazing while you're watching it. You're thinking, geez, he's way better than Jack Nicholson was. That's how it is.
Much more the Joker than Jack Nicholson was.
They had a much better take on the character. That's what a big part of it was. Yeah. Which is exactly the same thing that happened with Hannibal Lecter on this show. It is a much better version than Anthony Hopkins' version. And I love Anthony Hopkins' version. I love that movie. I love Silence of the Lambs.
Wow. It's
a wonderful film. But there's no denying that Mads Mikkelsen's Hannibal Lecter is considerably more interesting and deeper and more well-considered than what Hopkins is doing. I think that if you watch the show long enough, you get the sense that what he's actually doing in it, Mads Mikkelsen, is he's playing some sort of spider creature or something wearing a human suit. It's a really incredible performance. You can come away thinking he's not a human being in it. It's a really incredibly potent and interesting and fun and terrifying portrayal of evil. It's really strong work, and it's exactly what they needed to do with that character, who's kind of getting kind of cutesy and funny. He had a lot of punchlines, mm-hmm. In the later Hannibal Lecter films, and then this sort of restores him to his to his just sort of alien malevolent thing that was so powerful originally about him, but it's way more subtle in the show, and he's great. He's unbelievably great. It's one of the best performances I've seen. It's something along the lines of something like a Walter White style performance. That's a great show. It's a wonderful show.
I'll have to check it out.
I mean, it's sort of gruesome because it's Hannibal Lecter, but Amanda can handle it just fine. So I would recommend it to you. don't ever let Ronnie see it, but
she wouldn't be tempted at all.
Yeah, that's true. But he's been great in a lot of stuff. He's a wonderful actor. He's apparently a gymnast originally.
Oh, really?
You can really see that in how he moves. Tons of Danish films that he stars in. There are a lot of good ones. There's one he plays a Viking that's really good. What's that one called? God, it's a Nicholas Vinding Refn film. I forget what it's called. It's a really cool...
I read a little bit about Refn. He's pretty brutal, too.
He sure is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All his films, for the most part, are really brutal. He would have made a more interesting version of The Salvation, let me tell you.
What was it? One of the reviewers said, yeah, if Refn had done it, they would have been bathing in innards or something,
It's true. It would have been a lot more violent, for sure. It would have been much more violent film. But this is, but here's the thing. In this film, Mads is just a cool guy because he just looks cool on camera. This performance is sort of muted, I would say. There's not a lot there on the page for him. I mean, he's, the most of the film, he is not only mourning the loss of his wife and son, and soon his brother, also, just scurrying from, holes where he has no one to confide in, just hiding and trying to survive. There's not a lot offered to him because he's not the most he's not an actor that you immediately have empathy with. He's sort of unknowable.
Well, because of the types of roles he's played, right?
Yeah, well, there's that, and he's sort of a stoic face, you know. He's he always plays bad guys, but also like he's stoic, which is great for a Western hero, but you don't get inside him much in this, you know. He's dealing with a lot of emotional fallout in the whole film, and you know, all in the middle of action scenes.
Yeah.
No punchlines, no hardly any dialogue at all, really.
Right.
And I feel like you never quite get a handle on him as a result. Like, it's better that, you know, an actor with that natural stoicism and grace and sort of refinement is playing this role. He's interesting, and, you know, I don't know, you ever really feel like you're on his side that much, though.
Well, I'm on his side, but I, like you, I wish that there was a little more substance to the character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, he wants revenge. He's going to get it.
I mean,
actually, you don't know he's going to get it with this film.
It is dark enough of a film. It might not be going there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Might not. I mean, it might be everybody dies, you know.
Yeah, which is pretty close. But yeah.
But yeah, it would have been nice for more dialogue. I don't know, maybe some more backstory with his brother.
His brother needed more. I mean, I think that might have been a way to do it if you really liked those two guys together, you know? Like, if they had a really, like, really strong bond, then that might have, had a little bit more
exactly.
of a heartbeat, you know? Yeah.
I wish that there had been more of the brother there so that you could be more incensed when the brother gets killed by Delarue.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know?
He has, like, one decent scene, and then he's, you know, kind of just functional for the plot. And it's not even a scene with Mads Mikkelsen. It's just a solo scene, yeah. What's this actor's name? Mikael Persbrandt? He's also a...
Persbrandt, yeah.
He's a good actor. I've seen him in a few other things, too. Everyone in this is really good. I mean, I think that probably in this film, the one who gets the most opportunity to demonstrate that is Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
I think you're right.
Just because it's a big villain role, you know, like, and he is very good at big villain roles. But Eva Green, another great actor. You know, this role is like written specifically to not give her any chance to do much. she is playing the wife of one of the men killed in the. In the stagecoach. At the beginning. One of the assholes. Delarue's brother. And she has been, as a child, had her tongue cut out.
By the Indians.
Yeah. And there's a huge scar on her mouth as a result. She's still Eva Green, so sort of, you know, ethereally beautiful. And also intense and dark because it's Eva Green. But yeah, she has no lines of dialogue, having no tongue. So, you're trying to get into her head the whole time as well, as a result.
Well, you can tell there's something seething underneath.
Oh, she's not happy. Yeah, that much is clear. Yeah. you don't know what degree of what she felt about her ex-husband. It seems pretty clear she doesn't like Delarue very much.
Well, I suspect she didn't like her husband that much either.
Seems like, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, we see her at the guy's funeral early on, and that's she's just standing there at a
stoically.
Funeral. Yeah, stoic. There's a lot of stoics in this. they capture Mads Mikkelsen. The town captures him, and they sort of beat him up a little bit. Time to a post in the middle of town, and this is where they parade Eva Green out in front of him, and he's like, "Yeah, this is the one that killed your husband and my brother, Madeline, I think his name is."
Yep.
And that's when Mads tells her, like, "Your brother raped my wife and killed my son," and they start beating him again.
You know?
And this is the thing, like, given the circumstances in this film, there's very little, there's no room for levity. There's no chance for these characters to have anything clever to say because, you know, gah.
They could have worked it in. They could have worked it in with more of a relationship between the brothers, but
definitely something. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's while he's tied to the stick, Jonathan Pryce comes by and steals his boots.
Which also has the money that he paid him originally for his land.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yep. You won't be needing this anymore. And this is where Jonathan Pryce becomes not just sort of a bumbling incompetent. No, he's an outright asshole too, just like everyone.
Yep, just like everyone else in town, yep.
Yeah. Delarue kind of just claims Eva Green.
He just assumes responsibility.
My wife now, kind of. Yeah. And he appears to beat her as well. She's got a black eye. And when we next see her, and yeah. Yeah, he's just an asshole, you know. and so yeah, this is the world of the Salvation. And it's all covered in an oily, dark filter. Now, I believe what happens here with the brother, they
find the brother and they arrest him, put him in jail.
Uh-huh, they just catch him as well, and
right,
and he kind of bullies the guard. Keep calling him ugly until he comes over and, you know, because he's so mad.
Well, he actually beat up the guard.
Yes, that's right.
During the
arrest. Mm-hmm.
He keeps telling him how ugly he looks now that he's all beat up. And he's the one that did the beating.
Yeah.
So the guard goes over to, because he's getting pissed off now, and he goes over to give him what for, and Persbrand, the brother.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name in the movie? Do you know? Remember?
I don't recall.
Anyway, grabs his feet out from under him,
mm-hmm.
and reaches through the bars, grabs him, and smashes his head into the bars and knocks him out and grabs his keys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then escapes into the night, rescues Mads Mikkelsen, and they ride off with the bad guys chasing after him. But they get away for a bit.
Well, Mads Mikkelsen's in pretty rough shape.
Yeah, he's
falls off his horse a couple times, uh-huh. And you know,
he kind of gets, they stow him under a rock to sort of recuperate, you know, and hide from the guys. And while he is hiding, his brother is captured and killed off camera, and they drag his body around on a horse. I think this is, I mean, I granted, I didn't need to see another sympathetic character get murdered in this film, per se, but it's odd that this happens off camera, and we only find out about it when Mads finds out about it as he sees his brother's corpse being dragged around.
Right.
Again, it fits with the nihilism of the film. It's a film about victims just getting victimized over and over again, and you know, and trying to stop that cycle. I mean, that's what the movie is, pretty much, I would say.
Maybe that's the Salvation, stopping the cycle.
I guess. there is a good scene here where Eva Green, after we see that she has, you know, been basically enslaved by Delarue, tries to escape town by getting on a train. This is a well-directed scene. I mean,
taking all the money out of the safe.
Yeah, uh-huh. Which is just, I wonder what'll happen if I get on this train. Just ride out, you know? And it's shot very well with people, like, coming around corners, you know, like, following the feet, so you're not sure if it's, like, one of Delarue's men. Oh, nope, it's not. Just some guy. And then you see the train finally pulling away, and she's very excited, and then, of course, you know, bad guys chase after the train and block it off, come in and take her off of it.
Yeah.
Ride her back into town, put her in front of Delarue, and he's just like, well, now you're stupid. I'm going to have to kill you now. And all my men will take a turn on you first. So just more of the same.
And then they'll slit your throat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
just more gruesome, grim.
Lay it on. Lay it on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But she does spit in his face.
Sure, yeah.
There is that.
So, yeah, that's what she's up to. Excuse me. We're in the end of this film now, pretty much, like the third act.
Pretty close. We're getting to the big exciting climax.
It moves fast. There's not a lot of events. There's not a lot to the plot of this thing. I mean, it's fairly straightforward narratively. It's just, you know, what bad thing can happen that, you know, then that happens.
Yeah, what's next? Yeah.
He's wandering through the desert. Mads is. Stumbles onto a farm, and they almost shoot him because they know who he is. But instead they let him, like, sort of, you know, live in the barn for a night. Well, you know.
Well, it's another family of immigrants, right? It was the family that got kicked off the stagecoach.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, movie's about immigration again for a second. that is maybe the biggest disappointment for me of this film is that the things that make it, that could make it kind of interesting and unique and set it aside, are basically irrelevant.
Ultimately.
You know, the immigrant angle has, you know, just a couple minor little moments of recognition in the story, like this one. The fact
that they were soldiers in the Danish army, for example, has some sort of bearing on the fact that they can take care of themselves when trouble hits.
That they're competent with guns. That, you know, that they're good at good at killing people, basically. That's what that amounts to. It's backstory that, you know, is purely functional. You know, maybe and the Eva Green thing too. I don't think they get anything by having her not be able to talk. Like, I don't know what that gives them, other than, you know, more people who are just who have been horribly victimized trying to survive, being, you know, a thematic of the film, I guess, is how she mirrors Mads Mikkelsen a little bit just in that. But, you know, I don't know. Is it worth her having no lines of dialogue? I don't think so. Have you ever seen her in much? You've seen her in Casino Royale, of course.
Yeah.
I'm a very big
fan.
What
else has she been in?
She's in a lot of Tim Burton films. She was in the sequel to 300. She plays a bad guy a lot, which, you know, she's good at. Like Mads Mikkelsen, I guess. And she's on a television show that I just started watching. Also, like Mads Mikkelsen, a show that I'm into, which is called Penny Dreadful. It's on Netflix right now. She's the lead in it. She's wonderful. It's Victorian horror, kind of based on gothic novels like Frankenstein or Dracula. And
Victorian kind of horror.
Horror, yeah. Right? Uh-huh. Well, it also has horrors in it, yes, because, you know. that is era appropriate.
I thought you meant she was a Victorian whore.
No, there are Victorian whores. She is not one of them. She is she's sort of a mystic character. It's a good show, though. It has monsters in it. It's not as good as Hannibal, but she's really awesome in the show. She's carrying it on her back for the most part. I've only just started it, but it's, you know, it's another show that's really good with these people in it. You know, a lot of good television actors in this movie. So Mads comes back to town for the end of the film. Basically, he starts with Jonathan Pryce, who is not just the mayor; he's also the undertaker, coffin maker in town, and. I see when he makes him crawl in a coffin and, you know, to get answers out of him, you know, he forces him into one of his own coffins and makes him talk. And
Shoots him, kills him.
And then shoots him, yeah. and they wheel him into town in his coffin and, you know, to just sort of let everyone know what's up. He has made friends with this kid that we talked about a moment earlier. This is the grandson of the old lady who was killed in near the beginning, who is also, you know, he's young enough to have not been broken by Delarue and his gang and wants to kind of, you know, stop him as well. Wants to help Mads Mikkelsen.
Well, he wants vengeance for his grandma too.
Yeah, uh-huh. A again, victimized characters.
Yep. Seeking vengeance.
And so so this kid gets involved as well, and he sort of starts up he starts firing at the bad guys as a distraction while Mads Mikkelsen lights the town on fire. And this kid is immediately killed. It's
yeah. Just like, doesn't he get? He does get a guy though. I think he shoots one guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Oh yeah, yeah. He's on the roof. That's good. No, that's Mads. It's Mads. He's behind a rock or something.
Oh, didn't he start out in a crawl space under one of the buildings or something?
That's where Mads starts out, yeah. Uh-huh.
That's where Mads starts, yeah.
He sets the barn on fire, and then as people are coming to deal with the barn being on fire, he's, like, hiding underneath the crawl space next door and just starts picking them off. This final action scene is not bad. I mean, it's got some good stuff in it. It's got some neat little death gags in it, I would say.
Death gags.
Well, that's, all Westerns have some of those, you know. Like, it's the same end as Silverado, really. Except, of course, yeah. The entire town burns down. But,
well, and you basically got one guy against the town.
Yeah.
Against the town and Delarue's guys.
Uh-huh. Eva Green is, well, she's not really doing much at this point. Yeah, it's Mads Mikkelsen being hunted by a bunch of people, and then he's, you know, fighting back with his rifle, and it's pretty cool. You know, you've seen this scene in 1,000 movies. It's the end of many Schwarzenegger movies. It's...
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, uh-huh. James Bond does this sometimes. Yeah, again, there's just some cool death gags. Like, there's the one where there's a bucket of kerosene on the roof. That he put up on the roof, and he's moving around on the roof, and the guy sees him and starts shooting up, hits the kerosene, and it starts dripping down on him, and he's smoking a cigar, so he bursts into flame. That's a yeah. Cool scene. That's fun. I like that. You know, that was.
Wait, isn't it the kid that's got the kerosene up there?
That is the kid. I set that up. Yes,
that's the kid. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's correct. That is in the room that Eva Green is tied to a bed in, and so they're getting sniped through into the burning building, and like the guy drags Eva Green out onto the roof, and Mads Mikkelsen
he's using her as a hostage, right?
Mads Mikkelsen has to trick shot it, you know, and
right.
You know, stabs a guy in the eye with a knife at one point through the floor. That's cool.
Ouch.
Yeah. and then you know, then it just kind of comes down to Mads Mikkelsen versus Delarue, and you know.
And during all this, Mads Mikkelsen is wounded.
Yeah,
in the shoulder.
He gets wounded, so he's crawling around on the ground, and you know, while Delarue walks up and starts talking to him, of course. You know.
Of course, yeah. He's not just going to shoot him. He's got to talk to him first.
You know what? I underestimated you, and I won't
it's
make.
It's not
going to
happen again. Yeah.
And predictably, Eva Green shows up behind him and shoots him a number of times.
doesn't kill him outright though.
Uh huh. Yeah.
That's left to Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Mads can coup de grace him in the back of the head, and that's.
Yep.
And that's a salvation. the sheriff slash preacher shows up. Him and I guess the decent people of town ride into town at this point.
Yeah, where were they? I forget.
It doesn't say. It is not clear where they were. They're not important enough characters for us to get that scene. but. You know, just so you know, everyone in town didn't get killed, I guess. a bunch of folks from town ride into town at this point, and they're like, wow, we were waiting for somebody to come and save us all, and I guess you did, Mads Mikkelsen.
They don't even say thanks.
No. They almost kill him because he didn't kill Eva Green as well, and they count Eva Green as part of the gang. And he's like, oh, no, she's coming with me. Unless you want to fight about it. He's like, well, I guess we don't.
Oh, and then Mads Mikkelsen tells them all that they must leave town.
Yeah.
Says, I'd get out of here if I were you. Something like that.
Uh-huh. And they disappear. He's
not going to stick around to enforce it, though.
They kind of disappear into the distance. Like, it's the two of them walking off, and they, the way the camera does it, they just disappear into thin air at the end.
Won't they hop on their horses right off into the sunset, yeah, that kind of thing?
Uh-huh. But it's a time elapse. It jumps forward, you know, a little bit in the shot. Yeah. And then we start to pan back, and we see that the town is full of computer-generated oil derricks.
Oil derricks.
A really bad CGI shot to end the film.
Yeah.
And, I'm not sure what we're getting at there. Modernity is coming to town. Money wins out. Yeah,
encroaching.
They survived the salvation.
That's what it is, I guess.
There is not much to say about this film. I mean, we've been just talking a lot about the plot here because there's not a lot to say about The Salvation. It is an overwhelmingly dark film. It's not excessively violent as films go, as like an R-rated Western could be, but it's, you know, there's some violence in there, and it also is just, it's just an oppressive film, you know, in its mood and tone. I wish that created something a little bit more unique, a little bit more that felt a little more original, a little more special in some way. It's just not that strong of a film at the end, I'm afraid to say. I was really excited for this one too.
Well, so was I, especially when I read that it was a vengeance Western.
Yeah,
a revenge Western. Yeah, and you know how I like revenge movies, you know?
Sure, who doesn't? Yeah,
always like to see the bad guy get it in the end.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, there was just too much lacking in this film to really make it compelling.
They don't do anything terribly wrong, is the thing. Like, you want to watch an hour and a half long Western that moves quick, that has good actors, that, you know, has a distinctive visual style, is free, it's on Netflix right now, that you pretty much won't remember a day later, you know, that there's just not much to say about the film, then, you know, this is fine. This is just fine. I liked it more than Jane Got a Gun, which is a film we watched last year that was a similarly kind of a traditional small-budget thing that, you know, kind of just didn't have much of a definition for itself. It kind of just a run-of-the-mill, your standard modern Western. It reminded me of that.
There's not enough. There isn't enough character development.
No, there's not.
You know,
not at all. There's not much cleverness to it. There's not much reason for it. You know, I mean, it feels like this is a film by a guy who likes Westerns and wanted to recreate the things that are in a Western. You know, there's not much spin on it, and I think that maybe that the immigrant story was their in, and they ignored it.
Right.
You got these great actors. You're not doing much with them. Not giving them much to work with. You know, it's functional in an afternoon matinee kind of way. But yeah, that, like, it's not important film to see. You know,
right?
I wish I was more excited by this one. I was looking forward to it a lot.
Compared with 2 weeks ago when we did The Searchers. I mean,
well, you know, yeah, wow. You know, that's the thing. We've been doing some really significant films, you know, and then some of them, even like Last Train from Gun Hill, I would say was you know, that was a pretty standard Western in a lot of ways too. A lot of you know, pretty regular as far as its plotting goes. A way more engaging film, way more fun to watch, you know.
Right.
It just had way more depth of character.
Depth of character. I was just gonna say more backstory on the characters and
more ideas. Yeah. More you know, it was about more stuff. And so, I mean, I can't super recommend this film. It got decent reviews. Like, Rotten Tomatoes seemed to like it. You know, and I think seeing it in the theater probably would have, you know, would have helped. Any time you see a Western in a movie theater, it helps. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going 2.5 stars on this. And it hurts me to do that because I was, you know...
I was gonna say 3.
Yeah, I mean, it could be 3. It could be 3 too. I mean, it's good people in it, and again, it doesn't do anything terribly wrong. But yeah, it was a bit of a disappointment. And you know, when there's so many great westerns out there, I'm always like, you know, I was kind of hoping.
Well, that's
for,
that.
Yeah.
That's just it, you know. You we're comparing it with some of these great westerns, and and it's going to suffer in comparison.
Yeah, but did it merit an episode when there's so many other great westerns out there? That's the thing. Like, you know, and it's certainly possible to make a really great film with these limitations, you know, with, you know, some really strong actors, a short shooting schedule, no money. That's Bone Tomahawk, you know, movie I loved. Really loved that one. And you know, this one just, it doesn't get there, and it's unfortunate. So I think that's The Salvation. Yeah.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Again, no idea what The Salvation is, but that.
Mm-hmm. I think Mads Mikkelsen and Eva Green saved themselves from
getting killed. Basically, they still have horrible lives.
From getting killed, and well, maybe not. Maybe you know.
Maybe they have. Maybe they're something together there. Yeah. Maybe they can. I don't know. Is that even a thing? Is there a romance aspect to these two characters?
No, I didn't see anything there. but they survived.
They've both been victimized so horribly. I mean, who knows how many times Eva Green's been raped in the last day at that point in the film. Jeez, what a grim movie. Even still, as grim as it is, you think that would make it more distinctive, you know? It presents its story very, very dark and dour, but at the same time, I've seen grimmer. Yeah, like, again, Bone Tomahawk is in many ways a grimmer film, but that has a lot more room for character and levity and personality to come out. Okay, that's The Salvation. What else have you seen of late, Dad? What have you recently seen?
I got nothing to report. I've been watching Mariners baseball.
Okay. Well,
which is pretty grim too.
Yeah. Downbeat. That's nothing at all. Just Mariners. Okay. Well, let's hear a little bit. About
I watch stuff, but I've been watching the news.
Watching the news
you know, on the French elections, and you know.
Hey, that one.
That was
one
great.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Vive la France, huh? Vive la France.
Yeah. That was nice. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I have been watching a lot. Actually, I've seen a lot of movies the last few weeks. We'll talk about a few of them. Let's see. I mean, I've been watching Penny Dreadful, which I talked about a bit. That's a good show.
Right.
Eva Green, great in it. I saw The Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Volume 2.
Yes. Yesterday. Or day before, something like that. This weekend.
And?
It's really good. You should see it. It's a lot of fun. Really strong.
All right.
A lot of Tombstone people in it, as a matter of fact. Insignificant
Tombstone
roles.
People?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Really?
Kurt Russell is in it. Has a significant, large role in it.
Good guy or bad guy?
Well, it's sort of a mystery. I'm not supposed to tell you, I guess, because it's the film turns on that. He is Chris Pratt's father. The main character from the original Guardians. He's the dad, and he.
The Outer Galaxy.
I guess I can tell you kind of what his deal is. It's pretty interesting, which is that he is a sentient planet that has kind of over the millennia grown the ability to create matter, and has created an avatar that looks like Kurt Russell. That flies around the solar system representing him, like so.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and kind of what he does is he goes around and has one night stand hookups with people in different planets, and then flies away. He's like a deadbeat dad, kind of. One of whom was Chris Pratt.
I see.
And Also in it is Michael Rooker from Tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
And he is he's playing a space pirate, like a he was in the original.
Oh,
as well.
he was in the original. Yeah,
yeah, and
that's right.
He has a much expanded role in this. It's really and it's really effective. Like, it's a great role. He's awesome in it.
Oh, great!
And the movie All right. ends up kind of being about him. Like, he's almost the main character of this film. It's really fun. It's really exciting to see. And as a Tombstone fan, the two most significant roles in the film are played by Tombstone alumni. So if you add like some Tombstone energy to the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess you could say it's good. It's got Sylvester Stallone's in there too. It's fun.
Sylvester Stallone's in there.
He's in there. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's an enjoyable movie, and I think you would dig it. I think you know, if you and Torben are feeling like going to a, you know, a summer action movie, it's a solid one for sure.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. A lot of father and son stuff too. Yeah. Like our show.
All right.
So next episode, I mean, yeah, this will be one of our shorter ones because it was about the Salvation. next time on Westerns with Dad, we will be talking about, this is a bit of a request, but I think the one we'd always intended to do anyway. This will be the second in the Man with No Name trilogy from Sergio Leone. That is For a Few Dollars More. Starring Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef as their characters from that series, or are they? That'll be fun to talk about, like whether
that'll
there's
be
continuity.
Fun. And I, mm-hmm. yep, I in fact I own this series, so mm-hmm. be able to watch all of the special features stuff as well. Uh-huh. But now, as I understand it, For a Few Dollars More is they get progressively better.
That is my
original.
Feeling. That's my opinion. I think that this one, For a Few Dollars More, is probably the least famous, the least regarded. I think it's definitely better than A Fistful of Dollars. And I think it's very good. I'm excited to watch this one again. By the way, have you seen the trailer for The Dark Tower by any chance?
No, I've seen ads for it, just photo ads.
Yeah, the trailer came out this week. I don't know if it's... I want to do it as an episode of this show, because there's a lot of Western stuff in it, even though it sure as hell
the gunslinger
is no
part.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. The gunslinger is sort of as a knight errant, you know? It's sort of the conceit of this world. Once you get deep into the books, there's some great touches, like his guns are forged from Excalibur, you find out at one point. That suggests it's a sillier thing than it is. but you should see the trailer. It has Western overlap. Idris Elba looks great in it. They use the music from For a Few Dollars More in the trailer, as a matter of fact.
Ah.
Yeah, uh-huh. So, we'll be doing that one next time on Westerns with Dad. Come back to Clint Eastwood. All right. I believe that's it.
That's it. Adios, amigos.